I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome to the Fried Egg Podcast. I'm Garrett Morrison, and today we're asking, which players can the PGA Tour not afford to lose to LIV Golf? The reason we're talking about this right now is that LIV just wrapped up its first season last week and is already working hard to fill its 2023 roster. And so by the end of this year, it's likely that a few more top players will join the Saudi-backed breakaway league. We're not here to tell you which guys those will be because, frankly, we don't know. But what we can do is discuss what it would mean if certain players left. That's the topic. Here to dig into it with me is Andy Johnson. Andy, how you doing?
Garrett, I'm doing wonderful. This is a free agency period. There's no conditions with LIV, and there's still so many unknowns without them doing like a real full season. But I do believe that there is a known that some big names are going to go to LIV in the coming weeks. And that's what prompted me to write about this for the newsletter. And I think that it will be a very, who knows, like depending on who goes, like what it looks like when the dust settles. You know, I saw Atul Kolsha said that they're hoping to have their roster set by the end of the year. So, you know, if they're set, like who knows how the dust settles and what Kapalua looks like next year.
And I don't know what to make of the claim that they'll have their roster set by the end of the year, because so far they haven't been that organized in signing players, right? I mean, do you think he was just like saying that to, you know, that's his wish that will happen? Because that just struck me as like, if they get to sign a big player in February, right before they start up again, then they're going to probably do that.
Yeah, I think it's a lever, right? And I saw that they were expanding roster sizes to 60 because they're adding a like substitute player for every team, so yes, that they'll have a fifth. Like, I can't imagine that many teams are going to have a fifth player that just never plays that's a significant player, right? So those are going to be players that are probably Asian Tour players, and maybe some of them, like, let's just use Siwon Kim, who played in all of them, right? Maybe he's one of those guys that if they have somebody that decides to come on February, you know, right before the first tournament of the year, that he is knocked out and he pops in.
All right. So basically what you were trying to do with this experiment was to not necessarily forecast who is going to go. I mean, there have been rumors, persistent rumors about certain players. But if we found out anything in the past year, it's that if guys say that they're loyal to the PGA Tour, then sometimes that means that they are, and sometimes that means nothing. And so we don't really know at this point who's going. We've heard rumors about some players more than others. What you were really trying to do here was to talk about, you know, what impact certain player departures would have on the PGA Tour, right? I mean, this is,
yeah,
I think you were trying to establish a sense of stakes. What is at stake in this offseason, basically, right?
Yeah. And really, I think this all hit us this year, and there was a flurry of people leaving, and you know, the idea of like who's really important, who's not, right? And there are a lot of ways that they could go about this. Like, I think the way LIV has obviously siphoned some big names that were really important to the PGA Tour, Cameron Smith, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson. I mean, Phil Mickelson, he's not a great player at this point in his career, but he is one of the all-time great players on the PGA Tour. Right? That is a significant loss. So when you think about it from a sense of like, LIV has already accumulated a substantial amount of talent. And right now, the PGA Tour's best defense, best, you know, selling point centers around they have more competitive talent than LIV. and that they also get OWGR points. Those are the two big selling points, right? They have a pathway into majors. They get they get world golf ranking points, and that they have the more competitive tour.
And they're on TV. They're on TV. That's not insignificant either.
The reality is that a few of the wrong players go, and LIV might end up having the balance of we have a more competitive golf tour. You know, you can argue and quibble that the format will never be as competitive as the PGA Tour. That's fine. But if they hold more great players than the PGA Tour is in very, very big trouble.
So basically what you did is that you arranged players from the PGA Tour into tiers of importance, essentially. Tier one, these are the most important players whose departure would be a major blow to the PGA Tour. And then you go down to tier two, tier three, et cetera. So why don't you explain your tier system a little bit? Maybe I explained it all there, and then we can kind of go into tier one.
Yeah, so tier one, you're talking like if one of these tier one guys goes, this is major, major news in all of sports. One of these guys going would signal some aspect of a shift of power, I would believe. And I don't know if it's necessarily out of the cards that one of these guys might go. That's the scary thing about this, you know, if you're a PGA Tour fan. If one of these guys go combined with what they have already, you could, you know, you would be at the point of being like, you know, the talent's pretty similar. Tier two, these are big names for, you know, people that follow golf regularly. These are really, really big names. These are not the names that, like, your friend that just casually tunes in at majors might not be, like, super intimate with. But these are huge names in the world of golf. And listen, like, one of these guys going isn't a big deal, but a few of them, that starts to cause a problem. Tier three are, these are guys that are really good players. These are probably bottom end of the roster, bottom of the roster, Ryder Cuppers, and just not necessarily established stars yet, but players that are very, very good. And, like, you know, I think, like, at this is the stage, these types of players are kind of what give the tour a really big advantage. So these are important players, but they are not, like, huge names.
And a lot of these players are on their way up or on their way down.
Yes.
Have had great careers and are kind of on the downslope there, or are potentially building towards really great careers.
And then tier four is just like, these are really good players. They're good golfers. They are guys that could win in a given week. They are names that fans recognize. They have, a lot of them have been doing it for a long time, or they are on the up and up. But at the same time, you know, if they go to LIV, people are pretty much going to be like, who cares if they go to LIV? But I think the bigger impact, and you've started to see it with tour events, is this year will be the elevated series of events. What you see is LIV's impact on the tour, I think, is really felt on their B and C tournaments, and even down to D tournaments, is that when you lose Abe Anser, when you lose Kokrak, when you lose Sergio, you lose players like that, all of a sudden tournaments like Valero, all of a sudden their fields look really weak. And so these players, like, while they aren't, and they're easy to make fun of when they go, like, it's like, oh, who cares about that?
Who cares? Yeah. But it's like death by a thousand cuts.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, like, a good example would be, like, you know, Charles Howell is a great example of a guy like this. Like, do I care if Charles Howell's in an event? No. But at the same time, this is a guy that's played on tour for 25 years. People know who he is, right? And that's what this list of players is. It's like, you know, in this group, you have, like, Kevin Kisner, right?
This is tier four.
Yeah, tier four. Kevin Kisner is a very, very good player. He can win a lot of different tournaments, you know, most of them on shorter golf courses. And, you know, he's got a group of, like, he's got, like, a following. I know, like, Riggs at Barstool loves Kevin Kisner. So he's got, like, a fan following. But, like, if he goes to LIV, nobody's going to be like, oh, what is the tour going to do because Kevin Kisner's not around? But then, like, you start to, like, when Kevin Kisner's not around, when you get some of those smaller events, like particularly in Kevin, because if it's a small event on a course that's Bermuda grass, you know, then you're like, wait, Kevin Kisner would have been on this leaderboard, you know, and he's not. So, you know, in that group, I guess we could start at the bottom. I don't know.
And work our way up. I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
I had like Kisner, Tyrrell Hatton, who Tyrrell Hatton like is a bigger name player. I haven't ever seen him do it. He's obviously played well in certain things. He hasn't played well in majors, and I just don't think he's that big of a loss.
Maybe he's bigger in the UK. Yeah. I don't really know. I'm not sure that there's like a huge Tyrrell Hatton fan base, but then again, I'm an American, so
he seems to be like kind of a guy that would profile for LIV.
I'm shocked that he's not there already. Like, can't believe that Tyrrell Hatton is not currently a LIV player.
Like, there is like a profile of LIV players.
Yes, especially the British guys.
Yeah,
you know, that whole cabal of Poulter and Horsfield and Westwood and all those guys. It seems like Hatton kind of fits in with them, but maybe that's just judging from afar. I don't know.
I've heard he's a delightful guy. He's like a delightful guy. He has his on-course demeanor and everything, but I have heard from people like he's super aware. You know, there's something about like people that don't feel embraced by golf's, I guess, powers that be. I think that is a profile case like for LIV players.
Patrick Reed being the most extreme example of that.
Bryson
DeChambeau.
And I think Brooks, even as much as he would hate to be thrown into a bucket with, but like, I think Brooks has some of that same energy.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Like, yeah, chip on his shoulder. Me. Yeah. Everybody's against me. Like, there is like an aspect of that. Like, I think I comparing Harold Varner with those, but like Harold Varner would be one that I think would fall into like a similar bucket. Right.
Much more likable.
Yeah, much way more likable.
But similar in what you're, the structure that you're talking about. Why don't we actually lay out some of the players that you named in tier four?
So Sepp Straka, Seamus Power, who just won another meaningless event on the PGA Tour. I'm sorry, but, you know, it does.
Sorry,
nothing.
Bermuda.
Yeah. Corey Connors. You know, I originally had a category that I said, like, maybe the tour wants him gone, and Corey Connors was on it so that he'd never play on a President's Cup team again.
Trevor Immelman request.
Thomas Peters, K.H. Lee, Aaron Wise, who I think will have a big year this year, Sahith Theegala, and Davis Riley. Like, you know, those last three are really guys that I think could have really big years and work their way up into the next year. But right now, like, you know, if Davis Riley goes, everybody will kind of be like, oh, what could have been, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think his year and the year Cameron Young put together, like, I don't think Davis Riley was that far away from having a Cameron Young type season last year. He was super close to have, like, is Cameron Young in a way overshadows how good of a year Davis Riley had.
Davis Riley's numbers are great. Aaron Wise had a really solid statistical season last year and seems to have figured out some things with putting, which has been the thing that has held him back. He's a great driver of the golf ball, has won a couple of times, but has stayed kind of under the radar. Thomas Peters is kind of the outlier for me in this group. Is he really a PGA Tour player?
I don't know.
I mean, he's good.
I always have a, you know, I try and loop Illini in whenever I can, you know.
That's valid. Okay.
There's a bias. I like to.
I'm surprised that Thomas Dietrich wasn't here.
I almost put him in. He's got off to a great start.
He's really good.
Yeah.
He could have a great season, Thomas Dietrich.
Yeah. Yeah, he could. So, you know, that might be a little bit of Illini bias, but he could also, he was a name that was rumored in the Guardian article by Ewan Murray.
Yeah, that's right. Ewan Murray, I mean, the phrasing in that sentence, I actually pulled this out because it struck me as strange. I was like, this could be anything, but the fact that it's appearing in a reputable publication is giving me pause and making me think that there might be some sourcing here. But the way Murray put it in that article is that speculation in Miami has linked Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Mito Pereira, and Thomas Peters with LIV. And all of those names, aside from Peters' name, have been ones that I've heard before, obviously. But that is what that article said. And so, yeah, kind of a bummer to see Peters' name show up. But again, he fits kind of a profile, right? Yeah. He would slot right in with Martin Keimer's team or something.
Yeah. And I think I mistake not having Mito in this tier. Also.
Oh, yeah. He fits there, doesn't he? Yeah. Well, you put in your article in the newsletter, you put et cetera
yeah.
at the end of this list. There are more guys in this list than we just mentioned. You could put a number of players in there.
So that gives you the idea of that type of profile. And like, again, those guys going, it's another cut, you know, it's just another wound to the PGA Tour, because that's really like, I think those are the type of players that would profile like your, you know, Kevin Na, Jason Kokrax, you know, they are, you know, Charles Howell to extent. I don't think Charles Howell was ever that great of a player, but you know, Taylor Gooch would be a good comp in there. Like, where Taylor Gooch is a really good player, but nobody really cares about Taylor Gooch at this point.
Maybe Abe Anser.
Yeah. Right? I think
he would be verging on tier three.
Yeah.
Because he's that good. But he isn't a player that people were necessarily fascinated by before he left for LIV.
All right. So tier three, moving on. Tier three, I had Tom Kim and Sung Jae-im in here. Obviously, South Korean stars, young guys. You know, everybody saw him at the President's Cup, and they've seen, you know, Tom Kim win a couple events. He's 19. Sung Jae-im has factored in major championships, has won, has been one of the most consistent players on the PGA Tour. Those guys are in here, up and comers. Tony Finau is here. I think
Tom Kim, fact check real quick. He's 20. He's
20
now. He turned 20 in June, but the message is that he's young. And also tremendously appealing, as he's shown in the past few months or so.
I think something that, like, just while we're on the Young thing, and Cameron Young's the next name, but one of the things that's working against the PGA Tour is the fact that the tour has gotten so young, that youth talent is dominating the PGA Tour, I believe works against the tour, because there's less loyalty to the PGA Tour.
And guys are just sort of cycling in and cycling out. They see that their peak, the peak of their careers, might be a little bit shorter. I'm sure that they have noticed this, right? That not many players are sticking around for 10, 15 years at the top of the game. So a lot of these young players might come in with the understandable attitude that I better get mine before, you know, the opportunity kind of slips away.
I mean, Cameron Young's comments were, you know, his LIV comments were really something, where he effectively, I don't have the quotes in front of me, but it effectively was like, you know, I wish I was more established.
Yeah. Well, he was basically admitting, yeah, I heavily considered it.
Yeah.
You know, I was almost there, but a couple of factors held me back.
So it's just interesting. Cameron Young, I have Max Homa in here. Shane Lowry, obviously a major winner. Any major winner is a big deal. Max Homa's won a bunch of tournaments. He's obviously a very popular player social media-wise. And then I have Adam Scott, Justin Rose, and Billy Horschel, older guys who've just been around for a while. Billy could go into tier four. I just, you know, he was kind of more of a humorous inclusion yeah. here.
And because he is the tour spokesman.
Yeah.
That was part of your rationale.
I was wondering, you know, who would be out there, you know, just saying the most absurd things if Billy's not doing it.
Yeah. The guys in the media center would be the saddest of all if Billy went to LIV. You know, they would really miss just having an automatic quote. And by the way, this is something about Billy Horschel that I really appreciate, because he's gotten popped a couple of times for things that he's said, but he keeps coming back. You know, the guy still makes himself available. There are a lot of players who have been really sensitive about the reception of things that they've told reporters. Billy Horschel keeps coming back and keeps giving quotes, keeps interacting with the press, and I appreciate that so much about him.
Yeah, I've really turned a corner on Billy. He's
yeah, just, I know you've mentioned this before.
So he's one of one, which I appreciate. But I think like Adam Scott and Justin Rose, like, you know, Adam Scott is an interesting one, because like you obviously see the Australian team there. He's said nice things about Liv. He's also said nice things about the tour, you know, but like that's one where I feel like one day you could hear information that he's going. One day you could say he's committed. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes.
Now, here's why I think that Adam Scott might belong in tier two. For one thing, he's obviously a legend. You know, Adam Scott is by far the most legendary player in this tier. But you have him in this tier because his playing ability is not what it once was. He's on the downslope of his career. But if he were to jump to Liv, I think that there are a lot of younger players who really respect and admire Adam Scott, and that his moving would be an influential thing for them.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, like, I think like the Phil, there was a lot of negativity with Phil and the tour, and he kind of, one of the mistakes that Phil made was airing his dirty laundry with the tour. His leaving would have had such a bigger impact had he just left and he had been quiet about his issues with the tour, because it would have been like, whoa, wait a second. This guy who's like the tour has given so much to, by making all of his grievances so public in a way, now that I, when you bring up that point, like Adam Scott, who's been very politically like, you know, neutral in the thing, but you know, also like has been like a stand-up tour player for a long time going, would have a massive impact.
Yeah, and people love him. I think that Phil, a lot of players loved Phil and he gave them a reason to sort of make a break from him. But I think that Phil was always sort of a polarizing figure in the locker room. Adam Scott is somebody that you never hear anybody say bad things about. And so I think that, that would be impactful. The other one that people might point to in this tier and say that he could be higher is Max Homa, partly just because of his social media profile. And I'm not saying that that's a shallow thing about him. He has this kind of genuineness on social media and in his interactions with fans and media people. But he has become one of the more important voices, modern voices in the game, and very loyal to the tour, right? Which makes it this discussion almost moot.
Yeah, he's been so loyal that I don't think this needs to be talked about a lot, but he's won a ton. I mean, if you look at PGA Tour wins over the last, whatever, 18 months.
18 months.
He's up at the top. And you know, I think from Max's standpoint, for me, like, I just like to see it at bigger events a little bit more. An important part of this is your stardom off the course. Your name recognition is very important. But, as you know, from the competitiveness of the tour, it's important for you to be a very good player. And I don't think, like, I can't put Max up with some other guys that are in tier two that have, like, done it at the biggest stages, like, you know, like comparing Max, putting Max in the same tier as Will Zalatoris, who's literally been like a ball hanging on a lip here and there away from two majors, you know, this mm-hmm. year. Winning the Safeway back to back's great, but like that, seeing you duke it out and like close at a major championship, that's a little bit different.
This episode of the Fried Egg Podcast is brought to you by the Fried Egg Pro Shop. It's at proshop.thefriedegg.com. And we've got a bunch of cool stuff in there right now. We're kind of stocking up for the holidays and the winter season. So, Andy, what is some of the latest merchandise that people should be aware of in our Pro Shop?
Yeah, you know, I've got a lot of feedback from some friends on our hoodies. They love those. I've gotten multiple texts. There's my whole college friend's text chain has been talking about the Fried Egg hoodies. So that's one I would check out. We've got them in all sizes, a couple different styles too. So go to theproshop.thefriedegg.com. It's a good time of year for hoodies. And these are pretty versatile. You can wear them in a lot of different activities. So I would I'd check that out, proshop.thefriedegg.com. And thank you for the support.
All right. Well, that brings us to tier two. So who's in there aside from Zalatoris?
So again, you know, any of these players, what I wrote, any of these players would be an enormous loss for the tour, but a survivable one as long as it's not a mass exodus. So these names in a vacuum are very big names, but if three or four of these guys go, that's a huge problem for the tour, right? So Scottie Scheffler, this one, he's right on the verge of tier one. I just would like to see one more year. I think the fact that he got off to that such a hot start this year and didn't like the idea of, and the only reason he's not in tier one is the idea of anybody being number one in the world at the end of the year in May was unfathomable.
Anybody else?
Anybody but Scheffler. Yeah. Right. And the fact that he's not number one in the world, like his play didn't slip off that much, but it kind of like his play regressed a little bit back to like what he was before that really hot run. So that's just my I don't have like this is not Scottie Scheffler hate. Like I just like to see guys do it for a little bit longer than a year.
I actually agree with this. I think that he needs to have another burst like he had when he was just winning everything because he has tailed off a little bit toward the end of this year. And, you know, the names that are above him in tier one have just done it for a little bit longer. Why don't we run through the rest of the names in this list?
Okay.
And then come back to a couple of particular ones. Cause I think that there are at least a couple here that we can discuss a little more in depth.
All right. Jordan Spieth, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Zalatoris, Matt Fitzpatrick, Victor Hovland, and Sam Burns.
Why don't we start with Sam Burns, because that's the odd one for me. I'm like, how is he not a tier three player? I'm willing to be convinced, though, because obviously he's very, very good at golf.
He's won a lot, and he projects.
He hasn't won massive events, though, has he? He's won like two Valspars. What else has he won?
I think he's won, let's see, I got to pull it up here, but he's won two Valspars. He's won Charles Schwab. He's won Sanderson.
Well,
yeah, not big.
So some people think that Sanderson is a really significant win, and all respect to those people.
I think if you were going to call into question one guy here, I could see Burns being it. I think he's really good. I think he's also like he would be a name that would profile to me as like I know he's really good friends with Scheffler, which is like probably one of the things that would sway him back, but like. And I think there's an agency connection to somebody else that went to live. He's got the same agent as Bryson.
Yeah, that's GSE Worldwide.
So he'd be one just to keep an eye on. But like I agree, he's on the fringe. He's the last name in tier two.
Yeah, he's down there for a reason. All right. Well, why don't we talk about then Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, because you know these two guys are buddies. I think they have similar profiles in terms of their careers and their abilities. Like they're kind of in a similar spot, except that obviously Schauffele has had more success in majors to this point. And of course, both of them have been rumored to be very, very interested in going to live.
From what I've gathered, they have they each have individual offers, and they have an offer that's bigger if they come together, where they would each get more money if they come together. Wow. So, you know, I was putting vacation buddies together. If these two guys go together and like nobody else goes in this tier, it's a big blow to the PGA Tour because half the top six in the world are then LIV players. And that doesn't include Dustin Johnson, who is probably a top 10 player in the world.
I think it's a big blow to the Ryder Cup, too, because these two guys are among the very, very best American players. And if they both go, all of a sudden that Ryder Cup roster starts to look a lot thinner in the way that the Team Europe roster has started to look.
Kevin Kisner might move up a tier then.
Yeah, he might prove himself to be a great match play player after all. So Cantlay and Schauffele, if they leave, right, the way that I'm hearing you talk about it is that this is not the apocalypse. This is a really big blow, but it's not the biggest deal of any player. And so what prevents Cantlay and Schauffele both leaving from being as big of a deal as like just Colin Morikawa or John Rahm alone leaving?
The way the PGA Tour model works, the players that are uber valuable for the PGA Tour are the ones that are around for a long time. They are Rory McIlroy, where you are a relevant player for decades. Tiger Woods would fall into this bucket. Jim Furyk, Phil Mickelson, Ernie Els, these types of players. Even like, you know, Steve Stricker was a very valuable player. Davis Love III, you know, these types of players who are around for long times and are like, you know, it's weird, but like Ryder Cup figureheads. The tour doesn't own the Ryder Cup. They have nothing to do with the Ryder Cup. But like those players that like, oh, these are Ryder Cup, like, you know, every year automatically locked in Ryder Cup players. And when I think about those players, when you lose those, Dustin Johnson was one of those players. Phil Mickelson was one of those players. Cameron Smith was probably becoming one of those players. You know, I think Bryson, from a popularity standpoint, was one of those players. But like, these are the players that shift power. And at this point, the lines have been drawn. And when one of those big players goes, that is so much more now than it was at the beginning. Because the lines have been drawn. Tiger and Rory are on this side, and you're with them, or you're over there, and you're with them. And like, at this point, to me, a massive name defection signals potentially who's going to win long term.
And you don't think that a Cantlay Schauffele defection would be that kind of indicator?
No majors. No players, no majors.
In Cantlay's case, not really all that close. And also not a whole lot of
personality,
mainstream or casual appeal, because of the dial tone personalities. I think that's more true of Cantlay than it is of Schauffele, but neither has really shown that much in terms of the next level of marketability.
Yeah, and they like, I think it's important too, like, who's the most popular player of a country? Like, they aren't ever going to be America's most popular player.
They aren't really going to be super close. You don't see a scenario where they ever could be, or I don't.
Like, I could not fathom them overtaking Justin Thomas or Colin Morikawa from the similar age bucket in popularity. So I think that's the big thing. But like, I think the two of them together, though, is a big deal. Like, I would say, just a, you know, hypothetical, say one big guy goes, one of the tier one is Rory, Hideki, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, and Morikawa. Tiger's obviously in that, but, you know, really Tiger and Rory are almost in their own tier. But, you know, for the matters, Tiger is not playing golf. So, you know, he's not going to go play a live schedule.
He's like the captain of the PGA Tour side at this point.
Yeah. So if one of those guys goes, plus Xander and Morikawa, or Xander and Cantlay, how would you feel?
I would not feel good. And, you know, Cantlay and Schauffele, the significance there is if they're not playing in regular PGA Tour events and instead are playing in regular live events, then the competitive weight of the PGA Tour looks significantly lighter. And as he said at the beginning, that's one of the main things the PGA Tour has going for it right now, is that competitively, it is clearly superior. It is where you go if you want good golf competition outside of the majors. And if Cantlay and Schauffele go, all of a sudden, that's really a lot weaker, because these guys are so, so good at golf. And so, you know, if they're on a different tour, then it just feels a lot less like the PGA Tour has the advantage that it has right now.
Yeah, those two guys, like, I, you know, they're verging at this point on three or four. Probably this will probably be about the fourth consecutive year that they both have been like just at week in, week out top 10 players in the world. And like the consistency to stay at that echelon of golf is very difficult. Their personalities aren't great. Some of them, you know, you might want Xander win more. You might want Patrick Cantlay to do more in majors, but the week to week consistency to be top 10 player in the world for 3 or 4 plus years, where you don't really leave that top 10, is pretty extraordinary given the depth of golf in this current period.
All right. So you have Jordan Spieth in tier two. Now, you just read off the tier one players, and, you know, clearly all of those players belong in tier one. We can get to them in a second. But explain yourself. Is this just you doubling down on your shotgun start take that Jordan Spieth is just another guy? Is this just an extension of that?
I'm not saying that he's like Kelly Kraft. He's won two small events in the last 5 years.
I would say two mid-tier events, Heritage, but I'm not going to litigate that. I agree with that assessment. I think in PGA Tour events, regular PGA Tour events in the past 5 years, if you just say 2017, we're going to disregard everything before that. It's 2018 forward. For the past 5 years in regular PGA Tour events, I think one of the best comps for where Jordan Spieth has been is Billy Horschel. He's won a couple of times. He's had kind of similar strokes gained, total performances. He's been in a similar place in the FedEx Cup. If anything, Billy Horschel has been slightly more consistent. So I'm not going to dispute that. But in majors, Jordan Spieth has still been racking up top threes, runner-ups, top tens, you know, whereas Billy Horschel is nowhere near that.
He's only had one real shot to win a major, and that was at St. George's.
Okay, but I mean, those results in majors still mean something. He is a relevant player on Sunday in those tournaments.
The best case for Jordan Spieth being tier one is that I've been told by a person that's very intimate with network ratings, like might work at a network, told me there are two players outside of Tiger who make a difference in week-to-week ratings if they're in the hunt. It is Rory and Jordan Spieth. Those are the two players that will make a noticeable impact on the tournament's ratings if they are in the mix on the weekend. So that's the biggest thing. He might be the most popular non-Tiger Woods American player.
I think he definitely is. He definitely is. The guy won three majors before he was 25.
Three majors that none of the young kids have even seen.
Yeah, but I think that wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long ago that Jordan Spieth was the best player in the world. I think the 10-year-old
fan doesn't even know what he's done. They think he's just another guy.
We're talking about the 10-year-old fan now? That's the relevant reference point for who's big. All right. Well, the thing is,
I didn't even have Ricky in here. We could have put him and Ricky in the same bucket.
Where's Ricky? Oh my gosh, that is amazing that you didn't include Ricky. No, I'm not gonna go to bat
Ricky,
for that one.
I think Ricky would be tier three.
Yeah, I think he's kind of in a similar boat as like Justin Rose. You know, Justin Rose has won a major and has had. I'm not comparing the careers or the resumes, but obviously Ricky is recognizable in a way that a lot of players aren't. So what you just said about Jordan Spieth is my main argument for inclusion in tier one. Just the fact that he is the most exciting player in the world when he's playing well. When he is absolutely on fire, there's nobody, you know, aside from Tiger Woods, who's not currently playing golf right now, really. There's nobody who's more exciting to watch than Jordan Spieth. And so losing that potential, I'm not saying that losing his week-to-week performance for the past 5 years, which has been, you know, exactly what you have been saying, I'm not saying that that's the significant part here. The significant thing in losing Jordan Spieth would be the potential that he would show up at a Genesis Invitational and just be a fireball for the entire week and have it be the most fun non-major event of the year to watch. And that is Jordan Spieth's capacity.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I think, like, so if you want to put Spieth in the top tier, we can do that.
Hey, that's fine. Yeah, we can disagree about that. I don't disagree as severely with it as a lot of people do. I would mostly defend you on that one, but in this particular case, I think he slips into tier one. Now, tier one, if you look at those players, all of these players have been in better form recently than Jordan Spieth. Hideki, you know, maybe not. He won the Masters recently. That's the main thing. But Hideki obviously is incredibly important in the sense that, you know, he is a national icon in his home country. And so is that the primary reason that Hideki's there?
It's a golf-crazed home country that you I think it would transform Liv's business if Hideki became a Liv player and they could center a team around them with their franchise their franchise system where they want to sell these franchises. That's where Hideki becomes super valuable because of the ability to sell Hideki's franchise to a Japanese company that would pay very top dollar for it. I think when you go down this list, there are players that have said very little, especially if you include Spieth. There are players that have said very little about it.
Yes.
There are players that have been very outspoken about it. And you've got Rory and Justin Thomas in the outspoken category. You've got Hideki, who's pledged his support for the PGA Tour, but has kind of seemingly been a rumor. And then you've got Jon Rahm, who's kind of like been on both sides of the fence in the last.
He's the man in the middle right now. Jon Rahm, I want to talk about him a little more. One thing we should mention is that Hideki, you know, if everything that we heard behind the scenes was true, almost went earlier this year. And that was a major fork in the road moment. And he chose not to. And that was a big, big deal for this balance of power between the PGA Tour and Liv. But there was definitely a moment a few months ago when word was Hideki's gone. But Jon Rahm is so interesting, isn't he? Because he has said, I pledge my fealty to the PGA Tour. That's literally what he said at the Genesis this past year when it all blew up.
And at the U.S. Open or wherever it was, he talked about how is that competition, 54 holes. He went on that kind of rant, which was a very, you know, PGA Tour take.
So he has been loyal in rhetoric and in action to the PGA Tour. And I believe him. I don't think that Jon Rahm is full of it in the way that I think that some other guys are full of it. At the same time, he has been one of the players who has said, let's not make this bitter. Let's not make this personal. I still want my European friends on the Ryder Cup team with me, and has really positioned himself that way, kind of as a mediator between the two sides. And so my question is, what do you think Jon Rahm wants? Like, what does he want? Does he want the PGA Tour to have to like make a deal with Liv?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think a lot about if the tour had taken a little bit different path of fighting, if it hadn't have been ban-centric off the bat, where we'd be now. Part of me wants to believe that they might be in a better place without these bans and really like stooping to Liv's level. You know, in a way they handled themselves where they created this like very charged situation. You know, Liv was going to attempt to do this, you know, and by doing bans and really getting in the mud with Liv, they have put themselves in a position where they, you know, they've drawn a hard line and it creates sides. And that's the dangerous thing, right? Is like it's become a you're either with us or you're with them situation, which is like, you know, this is not a black and white situation, right? I think Rahm sympathizes with players like Eugenio Chachara.
Yes.
That's a young Spanish player who Rahm clearly knows well. And like, what do you do when you're 21 and you're offered, you know, $8 million or whatever he got? What do you do?
I think Rahm wants to have a relationship with him, wants to be a mentor to him. And I think that maybe Rahm is objecting to this idea that he shouldn't do that or that he can't do that now that there are these two leagues. But going back to the question, for me, I mean, I sympathize with the people who made that decision, specifically Jay Monahan at that moment, because it was such a hard decision to make, in my opinion. Because if you don't ban players, if you kind of make it easy for the guys who are live curious to just go over, try it, and maybe drop in on PGA Tour events every once in a while, how many more players would have already done that? Would Colin Morikawa have done it? Would Jon Rahm have done it?
I don't know. I think it's a really hard decision, and things would have played out far differently in either one. I guess the question centers around the confidence in what you have. You know, if you've got real confidence in what you have, like if you say we're not banning you, but you need to play your 15, your minimum events to be a member, then all of a sudden players might be pushing back on LIV and saying, hey, I can't sign a contract to play 12 events because it's important for me to be a PGA Tour member. And then all of a sudden you're actually like throwing wrenches in their system.
I think that that's an interesting option that's not discussed enough when we bring up this topic, is the PGA Tour saying, yeah, you can play some of these events according to the rules that we've set up before. We're not going to do the ban thing, but you play 15 PGA Tour events, we're good. And then what would happen? I wonder. Yeah, that is an interesting hypothetical to think about. Who would have left and committed fully to LIV? I don't really know, because none of these guys want to play 30 events unless they're Patrick Reed, you know?
And if you don't play 15 events, you can't play the players. You can't play the FedEx Cup playoffs, which a lot of these guys would want to play. You know, that's the thing. They could have done something. They could have done small little tweaks. It's almost like the tactical undercover missions versus going full out war.
All right. Why don't we get back to tier one real quick and kind of close this out by talking about potential players who could go.
JT never going.
Right. He's too loyal to Rory, and especially to Tiger Woods, and Rory and Tiger are pretty locked in on their new vision for how the PGA Tour is going to be.
Morikawa
is a possibility. I mean, he has said some things about his feelings about LIV that have given me pause in the past. And so it seems like he could be a major domino that could realistically fall.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment. He's one of the guys where you haven't, you know, anybody that hasn't been like extremely outspoken about the subject matter, I would put into the bucket of like, is weighing their options. I think the New Yorker piece that talked about how every player has an offer and has considered it like effectively like the lines of like everybody has an offer, everybody's.
No, there was like a little saying that Zach Helfand cited about, you know, there are three types of players on the PGA Tour, you know, I'm not sure if that was accurate, but that is what people sort how people have sort of assessed the situation. Even the players who have, you know, come out in support of the PGA Tour have an offer on the table and are looking at that money and kind of, you know, I wonder what it would be like to take that money.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things with Morikawa is the agency. He's in the Steinberg agency, XL, which is Tiger's agency. Same as JT, and Morikawa is in there too. So that's like one big detractor. Like, I think that's like an underrated aspect of this whole thing is agencies and the agents who obviously get a cut of all that revenue.
So, there are some agents who have leapt really, really quickly at that cut. And and we know who you are, guys. But Morikawa is somebody who's going to be, I think, even if he might be considering a jump, even if he might be keeping his options open, he's going to be somebody who's like hooked in with whatever this, you know, new set of Rory Tiger ventures is going to be, probably, right?
Yeah.
You know, the TV show next year that's going to be on the launch monitor. I don't know how to describe it exactly, but the thing that Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods are working on as a TV product, it would be shocking if Colin Morikawa weren't a big part of that, right?
Yeah. That's the thing. I think that one of the evolutions of the tour that has been smart is this, like the Rory Tiger brainchild with us tomorrow. It is going to give players the opportunity to make more money. And it's in a different way, but, you know, a door that is only open to you via the tour. You know,
yes.
I can't imagine any LIV players will be teeing it up in that.
Bryson is not going to be involved, I would assume, even if he might really, really want to be.
And then, I mean, Spieth has not said anything about Liv outside of the one tweet, which was, you know, ironically, right after he was rumored, it was tweeted out right before a major championship. In a way, it felt like, don't you dare ask me about this next week before a major. But that's all we've heard from him, really.
Yeah, you know, there's a set of players, of elite players, who are currently on the PGA Tour, where if the power kind of shifts toward Liv and enough guys go, you know they're gone. That's the path to success for Liv. Now, for me, and this is, you know, maybe a question we can wrap up on, because it's a big picture question. For me, over the course of the past few months, Liv's path to domination in the golf world has gotten narrower, as far as I can see, because a few key things have not happened for Liv yet. The TV deal is still up in the air, and the OWGR factor seems not to really be coming together. And Hideki didn't leave. A few other players who seemed like they might leave didn't. And so, you know, a few months ago, I was leaning towards, like, you know, I think that this is going to be really successful and that the golf world is never going to be the same. Now I could almost be convinced that within a few years, Liv is just going to kind of go away and the Saudis will get interested in funding something else.
I think the pathway into the majors is the most important thing. I don't think the world rankings are very important.
The only reason I bring up the world rankings is that they're still important insofar as they are a path into certain majors.
The it's no longer about OWGR, in my opinion. It is about qualification for major championships.
Yes.
And I think that we are going to see, before we see the OWGR bend, because anybody should be able to look at the OWGR situation and admit that there is considerable bias in the OWGR board.
Well, yeah, I mean, because they're affiliated with certain tours.
I think it's more likely that there will be exemption categories in new majors for Liv players sooner than there will be an OWGR change with Liv being accredited.
Yes. Well, I mean, even if the OWGR board decided that they were open to giving Liv points, it wouldn't happen for a while under the current rules. And so,
well, and they would, you know, all the players would tank and then their points would be irrelevant.
Yeah. And so the decision is going to be made by Augusta National. It's going to be made by the USGA. It's going to be made by the RNA. And, you know, the PGA Championship currently doesn't use OWGR, I don't think. They use PGA Tour qualification.
Yeah.
So that's its own sort of interesting little side note in this discussion.
Here's the question. Is the OWGR dead already?
I think that's a total exaggeration.
No, but, like, realistically, what chance does Dustin Johnson have of being a top 10 player in the world rankings ever again?
Well, I don't think anybody's all that concerned about that, because Dustin Johnson is in the, you know, fifth act of his career right now. I think that question is going to be a huge one for Cameron Smith,
yeah,
who by all rights should be a top three player in the world. And if a couple of years go by here and, you know, say he still does well in the majors, but he doesn't have enough OWGR points to stay in the top 10 or the top 20, then it starts to get a little bit ridiculous. But I think this is something where, you know, a couple of years down the line, then we'll be able to see what the effects will be. But yeah, I mean, you're right that if the majors decide to make a move to bring Liv into the fold, there's really nothing that the OWGR can do, and no more leverage that the OWGR has over the golf world. So we'll see. All right, so we kind of wandered into some interesting territory there, but I hope it was informative about what to expect, what to look for out of the next few months when it comes to Liv Golf. We're not going to talk about Liv every week, especially during the off season, but we thought we'd do a little bit up front so that you can kind of be prepared for what's likely to be news, at least on occasion, as we approach the finish line of 2022. All right, thanks, Andy. This episode of the Fried Egg Podcast was edited by Meg Atkins. To support the Fried Egg, a great thing that you can do is go to thefriedegg.com and subscribe to our newsletter. That's where Andy's piece about the potential defections to Live first appeared. It comes to your inbox 3 times a week, and we think it's a really good product. But of course, we're biased, and so you have to determine that for yourself. And the best way to do that is to subscribe. So thefriedegg.com, subscribe to our newsletter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.